Support for this episode of the podcast comes from our patrons at Patreon. Head to patreon.com/chasingEarhart to join the chase and become a patron today. On the morning of July 2nd, 1937, Amelia Earhart and her navigator Fred Noonan disappeared over the Pacific Ocean without a trace. Going on 81 years later, all over the world, lie scattered pieces of their puzzle, waiting to be put together. Welcome to the Chasing Earhart Podcast.
No solo venture this. Miss Amelia shares welcome from Southampton's woman mayor, Mrs. Welch, with Stoltz, her pilot, and Gordon, her plane's mechanic. On 6th of July, 1928, Amelia, again with Stoltz and Gordon, is given a big city welcome. This time it's New York who lauds Amelia as first woman to fly across Atlantic. Grover Whalen, Big Berg's official greeter, heads committee that makes Lady Lindy glad to be home again. Just year before, Lindy himself motored up this crowd-lined Manhattan Avenue as first accomplished flight. On steps of City Hall, Miss Earhart and crew are greeted by acting Mayor Joseph McKee, with mayor being decorated too. A city pays homage to aviation's best girl.
Amelia Earhart was a pioneer of aviation, flying all over the world, breaking records, and becoming a voice for women along the way. One of the many questions often asked regarding Amelia's career is, how could she afford it? How did Amelia raise the money needed to finance her groundbreaking flying career? It's a question that many have asked, and few have answered. Until now. Tonight on the 41st episode of the Chasing Earhart podcast, we sit down with author and project guest Barbara Schultz to discuss her book endorsed by Earhart, How Amelia Financed Her Flying, and discuss the many creative ways that Amelia and her husband George Putnam used to finance her flying during the golden age of aviation, from being the face of countless products to having her own fashion and luggage lines, as well as a growing public speaking career. Amelia Earhart invented ways to finance her passion while showcasing her other many talents to the world. Barbara, good morning. Welcome to Chasing Earhart. It's an honor to have you.
Good morning, Chris. This was an exciting thing for me to do and share my experience about Amelia.
Now, Barbara, before we jump into endorsing Earhart, can you tell everybody a little bit about your education and your professional background, please?
My professional background as far as aviation history, I've been doing it for over 25 years. I have 4 aviation history books in print, as well as several articles for the American Aviation Historical Journal. I've consulted and been in 3 different aviation documentaries, and my 5th book on Clifford Henderson, National Air Race Managing Director for 12 years, is just about ready to go to print. The rest of my background, I'm a pilot. I live on an airport with my husband. My 2 boys fly. My husband's retired chief test pilot for General Electric. So aviation is more than just an interest. It's kind of a lifestyle that we have.
Indeed, the aviation roots run deep. Now, a 2-part question to start this interview off. Can you tell us what your earliest recollections of Amelia Earhart are, and can you also tell us when she came into your life professionally?
The earliest, of course, would have been when I had joined the 99s and became familiar with that group, as well as the Zantas. I honestly wasn't too impressed with her to begin with, because I knew that she wasn't the greatest of pilots. But doing the project on her, of how she endorsed different items to finance her flying, I really gained a great deal of respect for her, because she promoted aviation safety. She encouraged women to fly, because her mentality was, if women think flying is safe and something that they want to do and travel by air, then the men folk, the husbands, the sons, the uncles, would also join in that. And very similar to Elizabeth Ulysses Grant McQueen, who had the same philosophy about flying and women, and the two of them were quite good friends. So between both of them, I really began to understand Amelia, her writings for publications such as McCall's or Good Housekeeping. They weren't about what she was doing. They were promoting aviation and just the overall safety and convenience of it.
Now, you wrote a really fascinating book about Amelia Earhart that covers an aspect of her life that a lot of folks may not be really too familiar with. And if you can, I'd like you to tell everybody the name of that book and tell us how that started out and how that project came into your lap.
Endorsed by Earhart, How Amelia Financed Her Flying began as I had accrued great collection of her luggage, and I wanted to document it from the very beginning in 1933 until the end in 72, when the original company that she endorsed a line of her luggage with was sold to Lady Baltimore. But then I started seeing all these other things that she endorsed as well, from chocolate bars to cars to, of course, aviation, and just started putting it all together. She was the number one icon in order to promote a product. For example, let's take Hudson Automobiles. Harry Chapman, the president, in his book, he wrote, it was quite a coup to get Amelia Earhart to endorse our Hudson Terraplane. And she didn't have to go pound the pavement or look for people to endorse. They came to her. Between Amelia and Lindbergh, those were the two most important people in America during the late 20s, 30s. Lindbergh just didn't do endorsements. He wasn't interested in doing that. So Earhart was the first person people thought about. She did turn down some endorsements, which was putting her face on canned rabbit, a couple of other things that her husband presented to her. And another thing about the book is interesting because it highlights and focuses on how creative the manufacturers were in the 29 and 30s during the Depression in order to promote their products. One myth that I tried to dismiss was the fact that many of my fellow women pilot friends think that George Putnam forced her into all of these endorsements. But that really was not true. He had sold his publishing business or given it to a relative. That was their bread and butter. It was the endorsements.
Now, what really compelled you to want to tackle this aspect of Amelia Earhart's life and professional career? Because this is really a unique niche.
The fact that she had endorsed a line of luggage in 1933 to the Orenstein Trunk and Luggage Company. To me, that was fascinating. And because of that, I thought there must be other things that she endorsed. And it's not a subject matter or an element that was ever discussed at depth in any of her other books. Basically, that's why I did it. It was not another biography, because it's certainly not a biographical picture of her life. It's simply the endorsements that she made.
Now, Barbara, you touched on a few of the products earlier in the conversation in which Amelia endorsed and kind of added her name to, but a lot of people might not realize it. She really did endorse a lot of products, enough to make up a book like this. Can you give everybody an idea of the list of products that she attached her name to throughout her professional career?
Aviation, there were five different airlines that she endorsed. She was never a pilot on any of them, but she did fly along and step out when they landed and greet many of the women organizations that were there, maybe the Chamber of Commerce or small group of women in aviation enthusiasts, and give talks. She did promote also Beechnut Company, which had probably over 40 products back in the 1930s, everything from ham to gum, tomato juice, just about everything. When Pick Karen came out with his gyrocopter, Earhart decided that she wanted to buy one of those and she could use that to fly around the country. But she would have to wait in line behind three or four other companies that also wanted to buy a auto gyro. But Beechnut offered to let her use their gyrocopter in order to promote her product. So not only did she have an aircraft to fly, which she tried to be the first person to fly a gyrocopter across the United States, and had she not crashed several times, she might have made it, but she was beat by a gentleman by 1 week. But she took gum with her and passed out Beechnut gum. When she flew, she took Beechnut tomato juice with her on her flights, because tomato juice has a high salt content, so it prevented the pilots from becoming dehydrated at altitude. So Beechnut was a big manufacturer that she supported. And then there were many little ones like Peter's Chocolate, Heinz products. And then, of course, she had her own line of fashion, which she tried to promote, but that didn't last but more than the season because it wasn't a very significant collection.
Now, you just touched on the auto gyro story. That's one of my all-time favorite Amelia Earhart stories. For the folks out there who might not know yet, can you tell everybody a little bit about the auto gyro background and how that came to be for Amelia Earhart?
Yes. In the late 1920s, Juan de Sierva, I think that's how you pronounce his name, brought his autogyro over to the United States, and pick Karen Sod, and then he bought the rights to produce it in the United States, and that was in Pennsylvania, north of Philadelphia. Earhart went back to visit and check out the gyrocopter and was invited to fly it, and she did set an altitude record of some 16,000 feet in the gyrocopter when she was there. So she was a competent pilot in that, but yet she wasn't flying cross country at that time, and she just was going up as high as she possibly could.
A lot of people have used the word hustler to describe Amelia Earhart back in the day, and I don't mean that in a negative term. I mean that is, she saw these opportunities coming her way, and she took every full advantage that she could of every opportunity that came her way so she could maximize her public image, and she could get her name out there and get her name into the public consciousness even more. Is that a fair statement for you to say that she was, in fact, a hustler? And why do you think she would have needed to add that aspect of all these products and all of this promotion and the self-promotion really to her career at that point?
Well, first of all, she needed to add it to her career because she didn't have any money. And one of the reasons, in addition to her being an American icon during that time, was the fact that she was very photogenic. She was very pleasant when she spoke, very sincere, and she appealed to a great number of people throughout the United States just for those very reasons, that she was a trustworthy person. She was morally a good example for younger girls. And this would go to her endorsement of Lucky Strike cigarettes. She came back from flying as a passenger in the Flight of the Friendship in 28. She did accept endorsing the cigarettes, but she did lose her contracts with McCall's magazine because smoking cigarettes was something that an American icon did not do. She did it simply because if she hadn't done it, then the pilot and co-pilot would not have gotten an endorsement as well. Endorsing the cigarettes did not fit with her image, but she was willing to do that out of respect to the pilot and co-pilot. She did turn down some things she thought were disrespectful. One thing I think that George Putnam was very instrumental in doing for her was arranging her lectures. 1935, I believe, she made almost $35,000 just on lectures alone a year. And she would do two or three a day, depending on close proximity of them and whether she could get a ride on one of the airlines to the next one. I think she took advantage, and as you said, in a positive way, about people and companies that approached her to endorse her products and thought over carefully how to do that.
Do you think that this was a role that she took seriously?
Well, I think she was quite serious about it. When Putnam offered her or presented her with a hat for children and the band on it said Amelia Earhart, she refused to do that because she thought it was taking advantage of the children. So that's just an example of one of the things that she did reject. To her, it wasn't the proper thing to exploit children with her name in order to buy her product.
This next question is one that's been sort of hotly contested and debated over the course of the last several years, and I'm wondering if you can sort of clear this all up for everyone. Can you break down specifically exactly the role that George Putnam played in Amelia Earhart's professional career?
He was basically her manager, and organized her appointments that she had as far as her lectures, appointments to actually promote products. He also managed their living expenses as far as when the house burned down in Rye, New York, they moved to California. I think that was in 36 that they did, and he found a house for them to live in. He also put into play building a larger house for them in the same area. So when she returned from her trip around the world, they would have a bigger house. He loved the outdoors. They spent time in Wyoming, and a cabin was being built for them when she returned back from the round the world flight. So pretty much an organizer for her so that she could concentrate on her flying trips, her records, those sorts of things. I think that all of the record flights that she made, those were things that she organized as opposed to having Putnam involved with them. I think he was strictly the everyday manager of expenses, where they're going to be living, if they were traveling somewhere, to make sure they had a hotel, those kinds of things.
Now, to further on that speculation a little bit, can you talk a little bit about their personal relationship. Did they have a very good personal relationship behind closed doors? Was it something that they were sort of business in public and personal and private? Or do you know anything about that as far as their marriage is concerned?
Well, I can't really address their personal life because I didn't delve into that. But I think just from the perspective of what I did see was they had pretty much a business relationship.
Now, this was sort of innovative at the time. I know you touched earlier on in the conversation regarding Charles Lindbergh and him being, of course, quite famous, but not really wanting to put his name behind any projects. But were there other folks that had come before Amelia Earhart that had done it like this, or at least to this extreme as far as endorsing products and putting herself out there?
Well, even from the 1600s, 1700s, notable people were endorsing products. But I think because of the state of the economy, it was a much bigger thing during or following the Depression. In my research, I didn't really see a lot of it in the 20s. Even in newspapers or magazines, you see a notable person addressing a product and promoting it. But I think because of the Depression, it was a major thing to have a spokesperson that was someone that appealed to the masses to promote products. So I think she became so involved in it for the financial reasons. Because of the Depression, there were so many more people endorsing items. For example, Roscoe Turner was one of the individuals who promoted, along with Earhart, different products like the Donut Corporation of America. Jimmy Doolittle, not so much as Roscoe Turner. Kingsford Smith. There were a lot of other pilots, and we'll just stick to the pilots at the moment, notables that were famous at that time. Because if you thought how the public viewed aviators during the 20s and 30s, they thought of them and gave them hero status because they could fly. They were a little closer to heaven, so they even had this magical gift of being. When you see a lot of promotions during the late 20s and 30s, generally speaking, they're pilots.
Now, if we can sidebar again, just for a brief moment, I want to ask you about Amelia's connection to Hollywood. When you walk through the Birthplace Museum, you see all these photographs all throughout the whole home with Amelia and all these various celebrities and really well-known people at the time. Was Amelia connected with Hollywood, maybe in part to George Putnam's connections? Was she just really kind of in demand at that time? Did Hollywood sort of come calling for Amelia Earhart? They wanted to be seen with her, wanted to be in photographs with her. Can you sort of dispel a little bit of the rumor and innuendo regarding her connection to Hollywood and all of those photos that we all see in the Birthplace Museum when we walk through it?
Actually, the movie stars sought out Earhart to take pictures with because she was by far more of a public image. So I have a lot of pictures that she's with different movie stars, but I think, you know, they were all photo ops and everybody wanted their picture in the newspaper, and who better to have your picture in the paper with than Amelia Earhart, even if you were a famous actor. That's why the National Air Races were so popular, because they were all the notable flyers there. But then the movie crowd came too, and you had these two popular entities together. So it was sheer heaven for somebody that wasn't involved in either one of those crowds to walk through the air races with their autograph book and get as many autographs as they could. But she was never involved in the movies per se. I think all those pictures you see with actors or actresses were all just photo ops. And she was good friends with Ruth Chatterton, who was a movie star, but also one of the most popular actresses of the time. And she was a pilot first, and then she became an actress. I think it was just photo op chances, but no involvement in the movies per se.
Now, you touched on it earlier in the conversation, so we'll come back around to it. And that is Amelia Earhart's luggage and her clothing lines. These seem to be products that she was especially passionate about. Can you talk a little bit about and expand upon the luggage and the clothing lines in particular, please?
Well, the luggage opportunity came up at a dinner, and Orenstein, who owned the Luggage and Trunk Company, they had a conversation, and he said, "Would you like to endorse a line of luggage?" And she said, Yes, that would be something she'd like to do, because it was important when you flew on an airline that you had luggage that was light and traveled well. So she did have some input into the design and the colors, but luggage back in the 30s, 40s, 50s was far from being light. It was very heavy. And if you look at the luggage from that era, most of the companies pretty much had the same style, the tweed style, the design. So I don't know that it was unique, but she did go to a great deal of effort along with the engineers or the manufacturers of the Orenstein Company to create very light luggage. It was successful. It wasn't any more successful than any of the other companies during that time. But I think she did it because it related to flight and people needed to have appropriate luggage. One thing she did do is she made a very, very expensive line of real alligator luggage for the upper class during that time. And not many of the companies in America were doing that. Only the French companies were at that time.
Now, of course, the second area that Amelia really threw her name into was her clothing line. Now, you'd mentioned earlier in the conversation that the clothing line only did last one season, but there are a handful of photos online, promotional photos of Amelia Earhart sort of taking measurements on models that were modeling her clothing. Can you tell us a little bit about how the clothing line came about to Amelia and what she thought about it?
I wouldn't use the word passionate about it, but she was friends with Elsa Schiaparelli, who had designed some clothing for Amy Johnson, British Flyer, at a dinner or a luncheon at their Rye home. Putnam and Earhart invited Schiaparelli, and they were discussing doing a fashion line, and Earhart thought maybe that was something she could do as well to raise money. And also, department store that promoted some things that she had, stamps for first day covers from some of her flights, said that she should design a flight suit. But she did design a clothing line, and it lasted for one season. But according to all the critics of it, it wasn't very notable. She used airplane parts for belt buckles and buttons and that sort of thing. But a real true flight suit never came from it. But I saw no indication that there were anything that she was involved with models. So I think she made the clothing, and it was sold at Macy's department store. Like I said, it lasted one season because it wasn't something that really was a standout within the fashion community.
Barbara, of all of the products that Amelia Earhart attached her name to and endorsed throughout her career, was there anything in your mind that really stood out that was something she considered to be her favorite?
That's a good question. I think her favorites, anything that had to do with her favorites, would have been involved with aviation. One thing I do know that she endorsed, and she did that because of her relationship with the author, and that was the book called Air Babies. It was written by Elvi Kalep, an Estonian aviatrix who had come to America to be the first woman to fly across the Atlantic solo. And when she arrived in New York, she met Amelia Earhart along with many of the other women pilots and joined the 99s. And then Earhart flew the Atlantic, so Elvi decided that she didn't need to be number two. She turned her passion for aviation into creating items for children to promote flying. And one of those was the little book called Air Babies. And Amelia actually wrote the introduction to it and endorsed that book. And I think that was kind of dear to Amelia, being able to do that, because the book is still selling. I mean, if you wanted to buy an original hardcover copy, it would be around $200 these days. Of all the ones that she did endorse, I think that was probably one of her favorite ones, because it was just a very endearing project, if you will, that Elvi created. Earhart was very happy to endorse it to help Elvi sell those books, which they've reprinted it in the last few years. It's such a popular book.
And as always, we will have a link to that book in the show notes, so if people want to pick that book up after listening to the show, they can very well do that. Now, on to the question that I've been wanting to ask you about since we first started corresponding via email, and that is something that has to do with social media. Now, I wanted to ask you this since we first started talking, because I think you're the perfect person to really sort of discuss this point. when it comes to social media today, it really is everything. Social media marketing is so crucial to a brand, to a product. It's something that's really kind of part of the business structure of anything from a toy to a movie to a comic book to a TV show to a service, whatever it is. But what I wanted to ask you was, with everything that's going on with social media today, with Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and Snapchat and all these things, do you think a person like Amelia Earhart and a person like George Putnam, what do you think they would think about that aspect of promotion? And do you think they would be all for it? Would they be all in on social media marketing today, do you think?
I think they probably would have used it in a very savvy way as far as reporting themselves. Certainly Putnam was, because Putnam did like to promote himself because he had written some books prior to Amelia. Have you looked at George Putnam's history?
We have. We actually have several of the extended Putnam family members assisting us with that.
Okay, so some of his earlier projects were very interesting, but I think Putnam, more than anything, would have been on social media. I don't think Amelia would have done that much, because I don't think she would have spent the time to sit and do social media. She would have been out doing lectures and promoting items. She might have posted that she's going to be doing a lecture or presentation somewhere. So I think Putnam would have loved Facebook and all this other social media. But Earhart, probably not so much. I don't think she would have been sitting behind at her desk and concentrating on how to get herself out into the public, because she already would have been there.
Barbara, just one more question before we wrap up the interview. Why is the world so enthralled with the Amelia Earhart case? It's been 81 years now since her and Mr. Noonan disappeared mysteriously over the Pacific Ocean, July 2nd, 1937. What is Amelia Earhart's impact and legacy in 2018, and why do people care so much about this case in particular?
If you ask anybody who was the first woman pilot, they will answer Amelia Earhart. So I think if you put it into perspective, she represents all women pilots, because according to the public, she was the first woman that they know about. I think she represents to them some person, a woman that did something that no other women had ever thought about doing, which we know is not true. But I think that is the consensus among the general public. I mean, she got on her airplane and she flew across the Atlantic by herself through weather that was incredible. She made an attempt to fly around the world. It didn't work. I mean, it did fail, but that was a foreseen thing that happened because of her not taking the proper precautions before she set out for Holland. That is her legacy. Her legacy is a woman pilot who, against all odds, did some incredible feats. And people remember her for that. They don't remember her for the failure of her flight. They just remember that she started out. And I think, would I go fly across the Atlantic in 1932 by myself in a single engine airplane, knowing what I know now? Probably not. So it took someone with a great deal of confidence, and like I said before, courage, and to set out on a journey like that with no guarantee that she would make it to Europe. So I think that is her legacy.
The book is Endorsed by Earhart, How Amelia Financed Her Flying. Barbara, where can they pick this book up online?
Well, the book is on Amazon.com as well as Barnes & Noble, so it's available on both of those sites.
Well, Barbara, this has been an enlightening interview. I'm sure a lot of our listeners will really be interested in hearing this. It's an area and an aspect of Amelia Earhart's life that a lot of folks might not know too much about. I want to thank you for your time today and sitting in on the Chasing Earhart podcast. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris.
I'm Chris Williamson, and you've been listening to the Chasing Earhart podcast. You can follow the project on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook using the handle @ChasingEarhart. If you haven't yet, go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Join us next week for a very special episode as we welcome project guest, aviatrix, and the founder of Dream Soar, Shasta Ways. Thanks for listening.